The Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement is called to order. Welcome, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. I think there's a little something up here from Education Minnesota to sweeten us up, and it's going to work. I trust it. So we have a very good agenda tonight. I have promised the commission members, I have a very good commission members here, and I promised them that we are going to continue to hold to the 7 o'clock deadline every meeting or hearing. And I intend to keep to that. That's why we're starting on time. We are just about have a quorum. So we will do the approval of the February 7th meetings when we do have a quorum. We're going to start off with the public testimony on the St. Paul teachers retirement proposal. And right now we have, thank you, we have Ms. Gilbert Doherty representing the St. Paul Public Schools. If you could come up. And Brian Rice and Dr. Mike McCollar, please. Thank you very much, all of you, and we've allowed 15 minutes. I hope that is sufficient for you. And there will be other opportunities for testimony. We're just starting this whole process, and I just want to stress that no assumptions should be made of what is going to be coming out of the Pension Commission. We are here to listen and move forward and work with all of you. So. Thank you very much. Who would like to start first? And thank you, Dr. Mike McCollar. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Dr. Mike McCollar. I'm the principal at Washington Technology Magnet School, just 2 miles up Rice Street here in St. Paul, Minnesota. I also currently serve as the Vice President of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Board of Trustees. First, the teachers of St. Paul are grateful to the Commission for your continued focus, commitment to our retirement security. We're also very grateful to Governor Dayton and Commissioner Franz for allocating financial resources to pensions and including the St. Paul teachers in the governor's recent budget proposals. As professional educators, we're proud of the role we play in shaping our country's future citizens and leaders. And while the challenges facing us are great, we have many reasons to be optimistic and enthusiastic about our mission, helping every student in St. Paul become college and career ready when they graduate. At Washington, 100% of our seniors have been accepted to some type of post-secondary education for the past 2 years, and all 200 of our staff members get to see that magic happen every day. See kids learning English for the first time, becoming proficient in the humanities, sciences, and arts, and take the first step in becoming the scientists and engineers of the next generation. And while we tend to be idealists, we take great comfort that part of our compensation for our dedication to this important task is a secure and dignified retirement. The importance of this security cannot be underestimated. We commend you for the time and care you take in working through these solutions to ensure that the commitments are kept for those who come before me and ensuring that it will be available for generations of teachers to come. On behalf of our Board of Trustees, I assure you that we have remained consistently focused on fiscal discipline. We have undertaken significant cost-saving measures, including reducing our COLA to 1% and keeping it there, even in the face of member requests to maintain parity with other plans. We understand the importance of making hard choices to ensure that our core benefits remain secure. We fully support the fiscally conservative measures proposed in the St. Paul Teachers Federation legislation, including the much-needed funding provisions, the adoption of a more conservative investment return assumption at 7.5%, and the proposed cost-saving measures. We respectfully request your support for this legislation. We remain steadfast in our commitment to work collaboratively to find a solution that respects the importance of retirement security while balancing the interests of all parties, including the taxpayers of Minnesota. Once again, we thank the Commission for your significant efforts focusing on this important issue, the leadership of Governor Dayton in allocation of fiscal resources in support of pensions. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the Commission.
Thank you very much, Dr. Collar. Who would like to go next? We'll save questions after all three of you are done. Ms. Doherty.
Madam Chair and members of the Commission, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. And I recall in 1987 when I started with the district that I got a call from Gene Washbush, who told me that I had to come and attend one of these meetings, which I didn't realize was part of my job description, and that the issue at hand was that the state was not paying The entire contribution for the newly coordinated members at the time for the cities of the first-class pensions. And we worked for several years to address that. And when pensions were first rolled into the Gen Ed formula, that additional contribution rate was not included at that time. And so the fund has, over the years, has suffered from some of the loss of those contributions that the rest of the districts in the state were getting from TRA. We've made a number of changes over the years, where we've increased our contribution rates over time. We've also had some changes to our benefit package. We worked in collaboration, and like Dr. McCollar said, it's important for the school district to be a good partner with the fund to ensure that both our active and retiree members are treated fairly. And we're thankful for the governor's appropriation for his pension proposal this year and look forward to working with him to also fund the out years as well. And I just want to commit to you that from a district perspective, we are committed to trying to solve this problem long-term for the fund.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Rice. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis, and I'm here tonight on behalf of the St. Paul Teachers Pension Political Action Committee. That's a group that represents 12,000 active, retired, deferred teachers or former teachers in St. Paul, and we have over 4,000 members that are active in the organization. We too would like to commend Governor Dayton and Commissioner Franz for their proposal on pensions. I've been lobbying on pensions since 1982, and the last time I recall a governor and a commissioner of finance making a comprehensive proposal on pensions was Governor Perpich's first term. Gus Donahoe was then the Commissioner of Finance. In the first year of the Perpich administration, there was a lot of budget issues. They had an actuary called Winklevoss commission a report to look across all lines of the pension funds, TRA, MSRS, PRA. They weren't successful in the first year, but they did come back with a significant injection of cash into the system, and it primarily benefited TRA at the time. That was the plan that had the most difficulty in getting funding. It was contentious, but in the long term, it paid off. It was a wise investment, and we are fully in support of Governor Dayton's initiative in this regard. It's $100 million in the first, this upcoming biennium, with additional money after that. And let me just say, it's absolutely needed. On a big picture level, Minnesota spends about 2% of all state and local government in Minnesota goes to pensions. The national average is 4%. Quite frankly, public employers in Minnesota have gotten by on the cheap in paying for these pensions. You've largely relied on investment returns and probably to some degree luck. I could say that the employees who've contributed into the system consistently have done what's required of them. If you look at national averages, public employees in Minnesota probably contribute more than public employees in other states around the country. And we have a pension commission policy that's quite frankly outdated and probably doesn't reflect reality. We say that for general plans like teacher plans or PRA, MSRS, it should be for every dollar the employer puts in, the employee should put in a dollar, so it's 50-50. The national metric is more like for every dollar a public employee puts in, the employer puts in two. So I really believe that a principal way to solve this problem is doing exactly what Governor Dayton and Commissioner Franz are suggesting, which is an injection of funds into this system by the state or the employer groups. And let me just say quickly, I know we're going to try to keep it to 5:45 on our part, so I'll wrap it up quickly. 11% of all the jobs in Minnesota are held by public employees. That's significant. It's over 312,000 jobs, over 11% of the workforce. You, the Pension Commission, primarily decides the pension design benefit payments for those employees. So it's a pretty important responsibility, not only for that 10% of the employment force that are covered by these pensions, but there's over 200,000 retirees that are affected by the decisions that you make here. And I'd submit that these benefits are modest. When you've looked at them over time, it's hard to point out that you're overpaying on any of these categories, teachers, police, fire, general employees, state employees. You've seen those numbers at earlier meetings, and I'm sure you'll continue to examine them as they go forward. And one reason for that is by 1980, Minnesota had, with the exception of police and fire, pretty much made all of its employees coordinated with the Social Security system. There still are basic employees out there, but by 1980, all of the basic plans were closed, again, with the exception of police and fire, and that's the national norm as well. We do support strongly the reduction from 8 to 7.5%, and I would say this is probably one of the biggest policy initiatives you have. There are three major factors you have when you look at pensions. One is mortality. That's totally outside the control of this commission. The second one is how people behave in terms of their salary earnings, how long they stay at the job. That's less under your control. The one area this pension commission can control is the assumed rate of return. And the lower the assumption you make, the more conservative it is, the easier it is. That it may cost in the short term, but long term, it's the more prudent course to take. When I represented police and fire plans, they had an assumed rate of return of 6%. It was considered very conservative, but it basically guaranteed that the benefits promised were going to be paid and that those pensions were affordable. So I, from our perspective, going from 8 to 7.5 is a very wise choice by the Pension Commission. It's very prudent. When you look at the national averages, most public pension funds are already at 7.5%. California is going to 7. I know some groups have argued that let's do another study. I don't know what we could study or what the Pension Commission could study that these other 50 states haven't already studied and looked at, and where California is going at 7. And again, even if you'd say there was a higher rate that you could live with, I'm not sure that's prudent. Because again, if you look at this as how you build the system, and you press the investment rate of return to its maximum level, you're setting yourself up potentially for failure, and it's more prudent to assume a lower rate of return. And we think 7.5% is reasonable based on the testimony that you've received and one that long-term would keep the pension system solid so that the benefits you are promising can be delivered. And again, I'll go back to my point about 1 out of 10 Minnesotans are in these pension systems. You've got over 200,000 retirees in the system. You know, it's very important to their income security for the retirees, but as well as the active members. And these are good pensions, and we certainly want to keep them. I just conclude with a last remark that, again, public employees in this state are contributing about $1 billion a year in their salaries to these pension plans. Currently, the public employers are contributing about $1.25 billion. Governor Dayton's proposal would increase that $1.25 billion to $1.35 billion, or about $100 million. I would say that if you were in another state and you dropped randomly in some other state, if the public employees are contributing $1 billion, you'd probably find state and local governments contributing about $2 billion. So I would say the state has got a very, very good deal from pensions and from its public employees. And we would encourage the Pension Commission as you move forward to adopt in Maine the recommendation on the 7.5% interest assumption. Investment return, and we really do think the funds for this should come from the state and employers, not from the employees. But of course, we'll be open to the discussion as it moves forward if there's other ideas that the commission has or members have.
Great, thank you. Mr. Rice, Senate File 992 will be introduced tomorrow, which is your bill. Are there any questions from the commission? Well, thank you very much. Thank you for keeping it concise.
And happy Valentine's Day.
You too. I love the bow tie, by the way. You're in the spirit here. But okay, so we'll have public testimony for Senate File 930, TRA, please. If we could have Mr. Amoroso and Ms. Beaver and Mr. Duberstein, please come up. And as I mentioned, about 30 minutes, so there's a long list here. You can keep it to 2 minutes, that'd be great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gary Amoroso. I serve as Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. That represents the superintendents and other district-level officials in the state. I'm here to support the Senate File 930 and House File 722. I want to thank TRA for involving us in the process over the last 2 years in coming up with the proposal that is currently in front of you. The main issue that we'd like to share with you tonight is the concept that the employers are being asked to increase their contribution 2% over the next 4 years, 0.5% each of the years. And the bills call for that funding to be to come from the state. We believe that's very important for the 850,000 students in the state. Our rationale is that over the course of the last few years, the school districts have seen an increase of 2% in the employer contribution. Those dollars over the last few years, 0.5% each year for the 4 years, was absorbed by the school districts, which meant any increase in the general ed formula that we received, a portion of that automatically went to pay for that additional TRA contribution. So we believe we're at a point in time where we need the state to assist us so that the dollars that come our way through the general ed formula can truly go back into the classroom. We're still running about 40% below the rate of inflation since 2003 on our general ed formula, and we want to see as many dollars as we can to be used in the classroom for our students. Lastly, ma'am, the governor's bill that recently came out only funds the proposal for 2 years, and even at that, it does not include an inflationary increase, which we believe will occur, and thus it's important that as you consider this, we hope that you will take a look at it and support the bill and support the funding by the state for the employer part. With that, I will stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Ms. Beaver.
Thank you. My name is Joan Beaver. I'm speaking on behalf of Education Minnesota Retired, and we support the TRA proposal for change. And I live in Stillwater, for the record. Education Minnesota Retired is an organization of over 7,000 members. Happy Valentine's Day. I imagine you can think of better ways to spend Valentine's Day, so we thank you for your service here tonight. I had the privilege of teaching high school students at Stillwater Area High School for 37 years, mostly U.S. history. It may sound kind of corny, but I felt that my life's mission was to prepare the following generations to carry on the great democratic values and institutions established by our nation's founders. I knew this was never going to provide my family with any excess material wealth. However, I also was contributing to a well-managed pension fund, and my employer contributed deferred compensation to the fund, so at least I didn't need to worry about retirement. However, my secure retirement and that of thousands of retired educators who continue to make their homes in every county in this state not only benefits us as individuals, it is an important economic factor in the stability of many communities. Public pension benefits are mostly spent close to home, which must be especially important to the small rural towns which are aging more quickly than other areas. And if aging retired educators do not have pension benefits that hold their value, how many might end up needing public assistance from their county social services? I feel very fortunate that Minnesota has a long history of looking forward and investing in the future. About 85% of TRA pension benefits come from the return on investment of my contributions and of the deferred compensation of my employer, which began in my first year of teaching. Although there were so many ways in which my family could have used those funds, especially in the early years of my career, I am thankful now that those investments from the beginning are the basis of a comfortable retirement. I retired in 2010, so I had the honor of sharing in the sacrifice of the last adjustment to the TRA system with a freeze in benefits for 2 years. Although cost of living adjustments were high during the 90s, those of us among the two-thirds of all retired educators today are already dealing with the gradually declining value of our benefits as COLAs have not kept pace with inflation since 2000. In spite of this, Education Minnesota supports the TRA proposal of an even lower COLA. If a teacher initially retires with a $2,000 per month benefit, this lower COLA translates into a monthly reduction of $572 in value by the 30th year. Of course, we hope that if inflation heats up and investment returns improve, that adjustments will be made in the future to reduce this loss of value. In some ways, I think managing pensions is a little bit like teaching in that you have to constantly monitor and adjust. We are willing to accept this reduction in benefit if it's part of a package of shared sacrifice, which will assure that defined benefit pensions are available to future retired educators who make it their life's mission to prepare future generations to contribute to our state and country in every way possible, and then continue to live in retirement and contribute to their communities both financially and in so many other ways. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Beaver. Mr. Duberstein.
And I and Paul will be the only ones testifying from Ream today to speed up
a little bit, as
per your request.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, thank you.
Senator Rosen and senators and representatives of the commission, I am Lonnie Duberstein from Vadnais Heights, president of the Retired Educators Association of Minnesota, representing over 9,500 educators living in all parts of our great state. And thank you for allowing my testimony this evening. This story that I begin with is real and probably has relevance for many educators. 44 years ago, a young graduate of the College of Education at the University of Minnesota accepted a pay cut from driving a forklift unloading freight cars to become a science teacher and coach in Roseville. That transition was his first reality check for his future economic prospects. During those 5 or 6 uncertain years of unrequested leave, the thought always surfaced, get out. Do something else. You're capable of making more money. The continued returns to teaching cost him one business startup partnership and the takeover of his father's very successful business. His father was disappointed, but he clearly understood his son's need to return to the classroom. I tell you that story, my story, because the promise from the people of Minnesota for a modest retirement that would follow inflation for my retired years was a very strong factor for cementing my decision to stay with teaching. Many years of contributions to TRA would one day earn a delayed salary needed for a reasonable retirement, one that wouldn't require social assistance. A secure, adequate retirement is vital for the recruitment and retention of teachers, which are growing concerns for many Minnesota school districts, concerns that I voiced in testimony last year. You are already aware of COLA cuts, including 2 years of 0%, and now retirees are asked to support a 1% COLA being proposed indefinitely, a time projection well beyond the lifespan of most current recipients. We are ready to do our part once again by accepting a decrease in COLA for 5 years. In service to Minnesota's retired educators and future retirees, I will not ask them to support an indefinite 1% COLA. The current retirees do not have time on their side dealing with economic uncertainties. Minnesota's contributions to public pension funds is only about half the national average. Minnesota now ranks 40th in place among the states for contributions toward the annual required contribution needed to retain the fund at 100%. The TRA proposal to phase in a 2% increase over 4 years to the employer contribution would still leave Minnesota's contribution nearly 3.5% below the national average. The contributions by active employees have been well above the national average. Minnesota is truly receiving high-quality education at a bargain rate. Minnesota's educators deserve better for their current and their lifetime commitments in creating nation-leading outcomes. Minnesota should not be facing these difficult decisions and needs to get back on track in support of its highly regarded teaching staff and programs. If the commission is able to respond to our COLA concern, that would certainly be appreciated. But regardless, we encourage you to support the other adjustments proposed by TRA. Bottom line, promises made must be kept. The commission will be making decisions that affect real people for years to come. Now for an if statement, just think about this. If Howard Bicker and recently Mansco Perry, Minnesota's above average producing investment leaders for the State Board of Investment, had had the full ARC amounts contributed each year since 1998, which was when several detrimental changes began, the fund would currently still be above 100% despite the low years of recession. Finally, after 44 years, I know that my decision to become a teacher was the right one for me. I am so very proud to be a retired Minnesota teacher and an advocate for all active and retired Minnesota teachers and their educational successes. Thank you, Senator Rosen, and commission members for hearing my testimony, and I don't envy your work on these difficult issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duberstein. Oh, before you leave, is there any questions from the commission? No? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this. And again, thank you, Ms. Beaver, for the little treat. That's great. Mr. Leathers, Mr. Moynihan, and Mr. Rowe, please. However you want to do that is, that's fine.
Senator Rosen, I'm Tim Moynihan, and myself and Don Leathers have yielded our time to our other two members of our organization.
Oh, okay.
So
well, thank
we will
you,
not
Ms.
testify
Moynihan.
Today.
Okay, perfect. Then we are down to, who do we have up there? Mr. Rowe and Mr.
Earhart.
Mr. Bartholow.
Okay, super. Please proceed and state your name for the record.
I believe I'll start.
Okay.
Madam Chair, thank you and the Commission on Pension Retirement for the opportunity for us to express our thoughts about the task ahead with the retirement problems.
Could you please state your name again for the record?
Oh, Paul, I will.
Okay.
I'm Paul Earhart. I'm Vice President of the Retired Educators Association of Minnesota. And we represent, and I would say that instead of over 9,500, I just got the update today, and I would say we're just short of 10,000 members. And we feel that REAM also represents a vast retired educators that come from all over Minnesota. They just not might have joined us yet. But I seem to have many connections with the commission members, maybe because I've been in education for over 50 years in various capacities as a teacher, coach, administrator, etc., mostly in Albert Lea High School, senior high school. During the early time of pensions, and I've been around pensions and around this for over 50 years, it came time to decide whether what if you wanted to do a straight TRA or a combination TRA and Social Security. I chose a combination because one of the things that we were told that we might get a extra stipend from Social Security, a COLA, and we might also get one from TRA. Lots of luck. Unfortunately, all the decisions that were made concerning our pensions were not good ones. When the pot was flush with money, the retirees got COLAs that were way too high. But there was method in their madness as they thought to try to keep the money away from the legislators. We also saw other things that kept the money out of the pension fund that results in our deficit today. My reason for testifying tonight is to show the commission the importance that we attach to pensions and the future of public education and the future it holds for the children of Minnesota. Whether you want to believe it or not, pensions are a key element in recruitment and retaining of teachers. I wanted to be a teacher and coach long before I dreamed of pensions. But my high school coach, who was a great influence on my life, explained to me that if you were a teacher, you wouldn't make a bundle of money, but the satisfaction of the positive effect on young men's and women's lives was much greater than the money you would earn. He was right. I had several lucrative business opportunities to leave teaching and coaching. I turned down several college coaching jobs in the Big Ten. Why did I do this? I rejected all these opportunities as I felt I was dedicated to teaching and coaching in the high school, and part of the reason was financial, as those jobs at that time didn't pay as much like they do today. And number one, there was no pensions involved. I would have had to give up my pension. So I stayed because I was promised with our original pensions that we would have a secure retirement. But now we face a much greater challenge, that of enticing young men and women into teaching and keeping the good ones until they can retire and have a good pension system to fall back on. To do this, we need to keep our defined pension benefit pension system strong and viable. Don't think for a minute that pensions are not important in people's lives when choosing their professions. Recently, I had conversation with my granddaughter who is going to graduate. She's talking about going into teaching. So we had this long conversation that comes around to, can I think that I possibly get a pension when I'm done? Well, maybe and maybe not. But something you have to keep your eye on. We hope that she will. My belief that the present-day retirees have done more than their part in sustaining our defined benefit pension system. We expected a cut to zero COLAs for 2 years. We accepted a cut in COLAs for 2 years in the past. Retirees have recently been asked to accept a 1% COLA for infinity or till death do us part. This was not something my fellow retirees could support. However, we are ready to do our part once again by accepting a decrease in the COLA of 1% for 5 years. And inflation less than 1% for 5 years, I seriously doubt that.
Thank you, Mr. Earhart. Okay. I think that's, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're going to keep moving on.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Rodney Rowe, a classroom teacher from Worthington Public Schools, and I also serve as the Secretary-Treasurer of Education Minnesota, which represents more than 86,000 educators across the state. I would like to start this evening by thanking Governor Dayton for his support in working to in maintaining a healthy pension system for the public employees of Minnesota. It is no secret that Minnesota is facing a shortage of trained, licensed, and experienced teachers, particularly in greater Minnesota and with teachers of color. Almost half of our teachers leave the profession within 5 years or more, or within 5 years, and more college students are not entering the education profession altogether. That's why it is so important to offer teacher compensation packages which recognize and reward their hard work on behalf of Minnesota's students. This includes keeping promises made when it comes to the pensions. Education Minnesota supports the latest legislative proposal that has been presented by the TRA Board of Trustees. It is a balanced solution that will ensure a stable, reliable pension for the current and future retirees. It calls for an increase in the employer contribution with state aid to help offset those increases. Retirees and the current teachers who will someday retire will also see their cost of living adjustments decrease. And this is a shared responsibility in order to maintain a healthy pension fund. We also support reducing the interest assumptions for all three retirement plans by 0.5%. Pension adjustments we feel need to be made this year were already addressed in this TRA proposal. Promises made to teachers should be kept. Chipping away at pensions will only make Minnesota's dire teacher shortage even worse. So thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for allowing me this opportunity to testify.
Thank you for coming up from Worthington. That's a long drive. Mr. Burrow, thank you very much. Mr. Barthelow. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the commission. My name is John Barthelow. I'm a teacher in the St. Michael Albertville School District, and I've been teaching for 6 years. When I was in high school, I took a class on community service, where I volunteered in elementary and secondary schools in my district of St. Louis Park. I discovered I connected well with students and had a passion for social studies, and figured out that this is what I wanted to do with my life, teach young people about their history and their society. I knew I would make an okay salary teaching, and if I stick with it, I can retire with dignity because of the reliable, sustainable pension that I earned over the course of my career. But if drastic changes are made to our pension plan, I'd have to question whether I could stay in the profession. I know many of my fellow early career teachers would feel the same. It's a false assumption that younger workers don't care about their retirement. According to a study by Watson and Tower, 63% of young workers say a defined benefit pension is important in accepting a job, and 3/4 of new hires say their defined benefit pension gives them a compelling reason to stay on the job. I am the son and grandson of public servants. My late grandfather, a social worker, testified here at the Capitol in the 1950s about to protect his PERA pension. My mother, a prosecutor, is now retired and depends on her pension. For me, a pension is the promise that my years of service meant something, that in exchange for my role in shaping our future, I will have this one benefit to ensure that my golden years won't be fraught with the financial worries that all too many seniors now have. As you are aware, we are in a teaching shortage. My school in St. Michael's had to fill 21 positions this year, including paraprofessionals. As a teacher in a small rural district from 2011 to 2016, I found my hiring committee duties increased as it became harder and harder to find teachers. Last year, when no qualified special education candidate came forward, we had to put someone on a variance. When that didn't work, we had to convince the original special education teacher to unretire and come back for an additional year. Minnesota is already having a tough enough time attracting and keeping teachers in the profession. Let's not make it even more difficult by rolling back on promises to our pension. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Barthelow. That's very impressive there, your history here, too. That's
Thank
wonderful.
You.
Lemoyne Corgard, Jennifer Ernest, and Scott Cronquist, please.
Chair Rosen, committee members and attendees, my name is Lemoyne Corgard. I'm currently a teacher on leave in the Anoka-Hennepin School District. I taught for 35 years, and I'm now serving our 3,000 teachers of Anoka-Hennepin as president of Anoka-Hennepin Education Minnesota. I come before you this evening to share with you my thoughts on our pension system. We have in place a system that is a staple of our profession. Our teachers, many of whom spend their entire working life, know that once they qualify for retirement, they have built a modest and effective retirement nest egg. They have contributed a substantial portion of their career earnings to TRA and have had to make adjustments and concessions along the way. Most of our current and former retirees are not living a lavish lifestyle, and yet with responsible planning have been able to maintain a modest post-retirement lifestyle. Educators enter education knowing that by dedicating their life's work to their students and our schools, they will be able to retire at a somewhat affordable and comfortable level. You are aware that we have a state and national teacher shortage. Enrollment in Minnesota universities and colleges for teacher education is down 20 to 25% in the last 5 years. In my district, we have had unfilled jobs without an applicant, sometimes for months into the school year. 2 years ago in Anoka-Hennepin, we had approximately 265 new hires and about 60 retirees. Last year, we had 58 retirees and hired another 270 teachers, and our enrollment is stable. We have an attrition rate of 15 to 18% every year in Minnesota. Statewide and nationally, 30 to 40% of teachers leave our profession in the first 5 years of teaching. Greater Minnesota has an even worse epidemic of shortages. In closing, I ask you to support the TRA proposal, which is a balanced adjustment. These proposed adjustments will work to keep our current TRA pension benefit predictable and sustainable. Thanks for your time and happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Mr. Corgard. Ms. Ernest. Yes, Representative Murphy.
Before we go on, could you give those two or the four statistics again of the leaves and the hires?
About people leaving our system?
Yes.
in our district.
Mr. Corgard.
Sure. 2 years ago, we had approximately 265 new hires and about 60 retirees. This most recent year, last year, we had approximately 58 retirees and hired approximately 270 new teachers. Are those the numbers you're looking for, Representative Murphy?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Mr. Corgard, is it then fair to say that you are not in favor of the governor's proposal for TRA?
To say I'm not in favor of it?
Yes.
No, I am in favor of it. I made a statement about that at the end.
Okay. Okay. I want to make that clear.
Would you like me to restate that?
Nope.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Ernest.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Thank you for giving me the time to address you this evening. My name is Jennifer Ernest, and I teach 7th through 12th grade social studies in Isle, Minnesota. It's about a two-hour drive this afternoon. We're a school of 550 students in grades E through 12, and we're located in northern Mille Lacs County on Lake Mille Lacs. I left my job as an archaeologist to become a teacher about 11 years ago. It's because I loved history growing up, and that's what I always wanted to be. I wanted to be an archaeologist. But when I left the profession, I wanted to kind of do what my history teacher had inspired me to do, to go out and do that. It was those history teachers in my high school and my middle school that encouraged me. And in fact, I had a middle school teacher, Mr. McGuckin, who called in some favors and got me on an archaeological dig when I was in eighth grade to volunteer. And that was just an eye-opener. And that's what I wanted to do. So when I went to college, I wanted to be an archaeologist. And after several years in the profession, I decided I wanted to go give back and be a teacher myself. It was those teachers that inspired me. Why couldn't I do that? Why couldn't I go into a classroom and inspire the next generation to become archaeologists or history teachers or historians or public servants of some kind? I also wanted to teach in a small rural school district. I knew the pay wasn't going to be there. The starting salary at Isle is $36,638, and we top out at $58,383. That's it. No matter how much education, how many years I'm there, that's as much as I will ever make at Isle, other than obviously increases as we go for cost of living. But at the time of that interview those years ago, I wanted to be in Isle. It really attracted me. I wanted to have that personal connection with students, and I wanted to be part of a community, a small community, form those relationships. Isle drew me. It had small class sizes, and I was going to be the only history teacher in the high school, and I still am the only history teacher. There's two social studies teachers. I teach the history, and he teaches the civics and the psych and some other the electives. I was going to get this opportunity to write my own curriculum and do these interactive programs and things with the students, and I get to do that every day, and I'm grateful for it. And I knew that if I remained dedicated to this teaching profession for the next few years until I retired, I would retire with a stable and sound pension. As we're all aware, Minnesota has a teaching shortage. Iowa is certainly not immune to that. Rural districts can't find enough teachers of any kind. It will be even more difficult for Iowa and other districts in greater Minnesota to attract and retain quality teachers without a reliable, defined pension benefit. Small rural districts can't afford to increase the contribution rate without the help from the state. There's just no extra padding in our local small district budgets. Although greater Minnesota is bearing the brunt of this teacher shortage, we're not alone. We've heard from other people. Substitute teachers are in short supply. The metro districts report difficulty hiring teachers for students with special needs or math or science. There are far too few teachers of color for Minnesota's rapidly diversifying student population. We have no teachers of color at Isle, Minnesota. Please make sure any changes to TRA ensures educators have a sustainable pension that they earned. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you this evening, and I really appreciate being giving it.
Yes, thank you very much, Ms. Ernest, and thank you for coming down. We appreciate your work, too. Mr. Kronquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I will be brief. I largely want to echo Mr. Amoroso's comments from earlier. We very much appreciate TRA and their willingness to work with us and address our concerns, and we held very good discussions throughout the summer and fall. We do believe that the mechanism that is outlined in Senate File 930, House File 22, that would cover the employer share for school districts is really critical. The simple reality is your local school districts are just not in a position to absorb that that employer increase. We know it's necessary, but we really want to make sure that any funds that come through the education bill this year actually go to help students in classrooms. And in particular, I would mention that the mechanism that is used is really the most efficient and equitable one, because it will reimburse each school district for their actual cost increase. So you won't be overpaying one district and underpaying another. You'll be treating your districts equitably. We do appreciate also the governor, his involvement, and I think you, Madam Chair, and Senator Pappas recognized that last week, how important it is that they're involved at the front end. We know this is going to be a tough issue this session. We appreciate the governor putting money on the table, although as Mr. Amoroso pointed out, the governor's proposal would only fund the first 2 years of the proposed four-year increase. So we do prefer the method in Senate File 930, House File 722. With that, I'll stop and be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonquist. Are there any questions? From the Senator Schoen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was actually, and it doesn't have to be you, sir, Mr. Korgard, to answer this. It could be anyone, and it doesn't have to be now. But I heard you say, if I heard correctly, 50% departure within 5 years. Was that correct?
30 to 40% of teachers leave our profession in the first 5 years.
And then is that
Senator Schoen?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Mr. Korgard, is that your district, or is that a Education Minnesota data statewide?
Our district mirrors the state and national trends.
Okay. Madam
Senator
Chair,
Schoen?
And Mr. Korgard, or anybody at some point tonight from Education Minnesota or from who might be able to know, I was just curious if that breakdown, how much that varies within the state of Minnesota from district to district or metro to greater Minnesota and even amongst the metro districts, how that might break down. I don't expect you to answer that right now. It's just a curiosity. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Senator Schoen, Mr. Korgard. Thank you. Great. Thank you very much to the three of you. Ms. Sundin and Ms. Kelleher, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commission members, particularly the new ones. We love that you're here and want to learn about pensions. I'm Louise Sundin. I'm representing the Minneapolis Committee of 13, 8,500 educators who include administrators and teachers, retired and actives. I'm a 39-year ninth grade English teacher, so I will try not to correct any papers that come out of this commission. We're here to support the TRA request for financial stability in the delicately balanced package of changes that, again, include sacrifices by retirees and an increase in employer contributions that would put us a little bit closer to the employer contributions in other states that are considerably higher. We thank the governor also. So why is all this necessary? Well, partly the reduction in the earnings assumption rate puts us in a deeper hole. But it turns out also that the actuaries made us do it. And the actuaries, and I've mentioned to this group before, validated that we little old lady school teachers really do live forever, except for Hawaiians. And so we want to remind you, and I want to remind you who we are. Still in our profession, 75% of our active teachers are women. That carries over, obviously, into our retiree corps. So and we are an unusually high percentage of us are single. We are heads of our own households. Or even if our sisters are married, they still are heads of households, and an unusual number are childless. We were married to our jobs because our families have always been other people's children. So the reason I'm saying this is so that you get a picture of who we are made up of. There was a bad sentence. What it means is
I'm going to correct you, Ms. Sundin.
Correct myself. We actually will have no one to move in with if we become incapacitated. We're trying to look after each other, but it means that without our public pensions, we might become your wards. And I don't know if Representative Thiessen flinched on that one, but I'm in his district, so it would have to be Hennepin County looking after me. The average monthly pension check for TRA retirees, those women, is around $1,800. That may be an example of some NIRS research, National Institute for Retirement Systems research, that says women are in danger of being 80% more likely to be impoverished in retirement. So I'd like you just to remember who we are. Second issue has been pretty well covered about the shortage. There is a shortage, and as of yesterday, the numbers, statewide numbers, there are 31 people teaching with no license in Minnesota classrooms. There are 248 classroom assignments by 106 persons who are teaching out of their licensure area because they couldn't find licensed people. So I'm hoping you all read the teacher supply and demand report by Minnesota Department of Ed. It's thick enough to be helpful for sleeping. The other issue is our actives took a four-year cut out of the last pension bill. They can't afford any more of that, so active teachers actually need an increase. Starting salaries in the mid-40s don't do it for millennials, particularly with huge debt, and particularly since so many of their friends and colleagues start at twice that. They don't get this. They will move up and out of the classroom for a title and more money, which doesn't help our students any, or if they don't get the support they need, and they often don't, then they leave altogether. That's not good for Minnesota's children. Okay. So my mom and dad were both teachers, and they convinced one of their children to go into education, moi. But no more do teacher families encourage their children to go into teaching. Not at all. They don't want their children to feel disrespected or not supported, and so they don't. Also, please don't raise the retirement age beyond 66. Think of my friend Janet, who right now is in her 40th year of teaching kindergarten. Another year, and she'd never be able to get up from those little kindergarten chairs. So just don't go there. That brings us to the retiree COLAs. We had to bring a lot of our retirees kicking and screaming into this 1% for 5 years. They won't get it back. We didn't get it back after the last one. Director Hacking and her staff have carefully crafted this package, but it's delicate. The children of Minnesota we want to learn from good new teachers who will stay in the classroom and the profession, and have retired teachers who live and spend and support your local economies throughout every county in this state and in every one of your districts. We all have members there. They all deserve your timely, positive action. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sundin. Ms. Sundin, I was going to say you could probably correct my grammar, but I think I'm going to have to correct yours. So.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every locally elected school board member from around the state, and I want to attempt to not be Charlie Brown's teacher, but I'll give a big ditto for what Mr. Kuhnquist and what Mr. Amoroso talked about. And I really want to add my two cents in that it is House File 722 and Senate File 930, which really attempts to cover employer costs going forward. And the governor was thoughtful enough to include pension funding in his budget this year, which is a huge departure from what we've seen in the past. So I credit him for realizing that pensions have impacts on school districts. But really, this 722 file would actually cover all 4 years of increased cost, not just two. Without that, school districts would have to look at their community or within their classrooms to come up with the leftover percent that we would have to cover. So with that, I want to send my support that way, and we'll be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kelleher. Any questions for either two? Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, I don't know if it's necessarily a question. It's just to expound upon one of the comments that Ms. Sundin made as she was talking about. It is teachers in Minnesota that the actuarial study showed live longer. Hawaiians, she forgot a group that was also cloistered nuns, just for the record.
Madam Chair, and Representative O'Driscoll, actually in the public schools for a number of years after the nuns spent a career in their schools, then they were told to come to the public schools to get a pension. So for a number of, we had to raise the retirement age to accommodate that. So I can appreciate that. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you very much to the two of you. Members, we do have a quorum, and I was hoping that we could get a motion to approve the February 7th meeting minutes. Thank you, Representative Thiessen. A motion has been made to approve the February 7th meetings. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Members, we have another motion in front of us. It's the approval of the actuarial assumptions for... Well, you can read them here. And I'm just going to go ahead and turn it over to Susan Lucheski, who can go ahead, and Rachel Barth, who can give us an overview of why we need this motion. Thank you, Ms. Lucheski.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Rosen. I'll just give a little, short overview of the motion and what we're hoping that the commission will approve. I will turn it over to Michael DeLeon, who is here from Deloitte. Did you bring copies then?
I have copies right here, yes.
Okay, so you may want to go ahead and pass on those out. So the commission may remember that last year we approved this. So the new members, of course, would not, but the members who were here last year worked through this chart, approving assumption changes for the big three. So MSRS General, Para General, and TRA. Came forward after their six-year experience study and asked the commission to approve revised, updated assumptions, and the commission then did go ahead by motion, approved those changes. This year, and just very quickly, I'll go through what is in the packet here of materials. There is the motion, which is a little more complicated because we're trying to do several things here with this motion. The letters from the executive directors of each of the plans. Another very colorful chart that lays out all of the assumptions, almost all of the assumptions, but for a few less significant ones at the end, all of the assumptions that were that we're asking the commission to approve. And then finally, the report on the CSA experience study or combined service annuity use of those annuities by members. That experience study was conducted by Deloitte, and Deloitte will give more details on that in a minute. So the approval that's being requested or the motion breaks out into two parts this time around. The first relates to the assumptions that will need to be updated to reflect the experience study of the use of combined service annuities in the pension plans. And those assumptions will affect all of the plans. So those are the big three and all of the smaller plans. The second part of what we're asking for approval in the motion relates to assumptions for the smaller plans. So the smaller plans had experience studies conducted in the last year, and they all then are asking to have updates on their assumptions approved as well. I'll just mention in my memo, I went through kind of the layout of the assumptions in the statutes. We have some assumptions in the statutes that need to be changed by really one only that needs to be changed by legislation, and that's the investment return assumption. Several others that are specifically laid out in the statutes but can be changed by motion, and then a lot more that can be changed by motion. So those are like the mortality, the retirement rates, disability rates. In addition to, the assumptions are determined by the actuary with the assistance of the actuary, but they need to be tested occasionally to make sure that they actually reflect experience. And so that's why we talk about these experience studies and what comes out of them, which is, actual experience, and then from that we develop new assumptions. Each of the plans did that with their boards. They went through the process with their actuary, and then their boards approved the changes, and then they in turn sent letters to the commission requesting the approval of the new assumptions. All of the assumptions would take effect on July 1 of 2017. If the commission chose not to approve them, they would automatically take effect a year later. So that's all in the statutes relating to the assumptions. There's one final little odd thing going on here. The board for Parageneral, at the request of the executive director, approved a change in their mortality improvement table from MP 2015 to MP 2016. That was done because MP 2016 is actually a more accurate reflection of mortality improvements, and it also does then, it means that people actually aren't living as long. It was a sort of a fix on the MP 2015 table, and so it is a cost savings to the plan. So PARA went ahead and adopted that change. Under our statutes, that change cannot take effect actually unless we change the statute. So the statute right now says that a change like mortality can only be approved by the board and then take effect and get through the commission's approval if the mortality change is based on a recent experience study. And they have not done a new experience study. That was done last year, and as a result of that, they approved MP 2016. This change now has come about since then, and so the request is that the commission approve that, but that approval is contingent on a change in the statute. PARA's funding bill does include this change. So it seems fairly non-controversial, but of course, maybe something that the commission would have some questions on. The executive director of PARA is here, so if there were questions on that, he could speak to those. But that's a general overview of what this motion does and why the approval of the commission is needed.
Are there any questions of Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lincheski, you raised an interesting question that PERA was talking about the updated numbers on that, which more accurately reflected mortality, which then leads me as a commission member to ask how would that affect the other three plans that the commission has jurisdiction over? Would they be seeing a correction coming forward as well on that, or do we have a status update?
Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you. Senator Rosen, Representative O'Driscoll. The way the statute change is drafted is permissive, so it would allow the board of a plan to adopt a new mortality improvement table if they determine, based on the recommendation of their actuary, that is appropriate for the plan. So it wouldn't actually force that kind of a change on the plan, but it would then allow the plans to go ahead and make that change if they determine, as PRA did, that it is a change that they want to use in their assumptions and in their actuarial evaluation.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lincheski, are you aware of the other plans receiving information or in possession of information to that nature or planning on receiving that information, or is it just kind of something that the actuary that PERA was using that might be different than what the other actuaries for the other plans have been using or working on?
Ms. Lincheski.
Senator Rosen, Representative Driscoll, the plans are all aware of this. MP 2016 is certainly something that's been discussed, and the actuaries actually are all, we have the same actuary for three of the plans, St. Paul, MSRS, and PARA, all use the same actuary. So the recommendation, I'm guessing, would have been similar, but I think we have this statute that kind of interferes with the plans making this type of a change. I believe since the executive director of PARA was an actuary and probably still, certainly is able to function in that capacity and provide that kind of advice, he went ahead then and felt that this was an important change and so has ask their board, ask the Board of Para to make the change, approve the change.
Okay. Any further questions? Ms. Lucheski, and what are the consequences if this these assumptions were not voted on and moved tonight? Are there any consequences? Ms. Lucheski?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Rosen. The consequence would be that they would not be able to use these new assumptions in their actuarial valuations for this coming year. So there is the CSA changes, and actually I should point out that page 4, I believe, of the memo does provide, and the gentleman from Deloitte will go into that in a little bit more depth, but there are some significant significant savings for the plans if the CSA assumptions are adopted. It works in kind of the opposite direction for the other assumption changes. For instance, mortality increases liability, but that will be offset by these CSA changes for the most part. So the advantage of approving this is that they can use this for the next actuarial valuation. If it isn't approved, then, of course, it would not be able to be used, and it would then take effect in a year, in a year's time for that valuation.
Welcome, Mr. DeLeon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for coming and giving us a rundown on this, please, before we take a vote.
Absolutely happy to do so. And you can see I got in the holiday spirit as well with my car. Yeah. I don't think that's approved by Deloitte, so nobody turned me into that.
That's kind of cute.
Moving to slide 3 of the presentation, I just want to give you a highlight of what we're discussing today. The CSA and CBM, or the combined service annuity coverage by more than one retirement plan. Basically, this is a provision in the statutes that permits someone who moves between a pension plan, between, say, TRA and PARA or MSRS, to get the benefits of the combined service that they provided across all Minnesota pension plans. So it's primarily looking at their ability to vest in a new plan effectively immediately when they move to a different system, the ability to get an earlier unreduced retirement benefit, possibly if they were eligible for rule of 90 under one plan. They would be under another plan if they switched over, even though they might have shifted over after that was no longer available. And finally, that they get their final average pay. So, you know, that it's based on their final average pay with their last employer within one of the Minnesota systems, as opposed to when they left one and moved to another. And this, in many cases, can be very valuable because, obviously, you know, you're going to have a much higher salary, even though there is a part of the benefits is that even after you leave one plan, there is an augmentation to allow, you know, some of the inflation you'll be protected from some of the inflation, but usually salary increases are much greater than inflation. So, in general, these provisions can be very valuable to employees. And basically, what happened is that this assumption hasn't been considered since 2001. So, it was the experience of the years preceding 2001 were used to determine what an appropriate load should be, or consideration should be, for the experience of the population back then of people shifting between plans and how much that increases their benefits. At the time, there was one actuary working for all the plans. The state's actuary worked across plans. So they had access to all the data. It was an easier study for them to just look at, you know, what does this mean across all of our plans? After that shifted to where there were separate actuaries for the plans, they didn't have access to each other's data anymore and really couldn't be studied or wasn't studied in the experience studies that came up in between. So it hadn't been looked at for about 15 years. So our recommendation is going forward to start looking at this with the regular quadrennial experience studies so that this assumption can be maintained on a regular basis and not have this giant jump that you're going to see that happens this year. So if we move over to slide 4, I'll just give you a brief understanding of what we did, what Deloitte did, is we basically gathered the census from each of the plans. Actually, this is part of our normal process in our annual reviews, is to collect this data. So we had all this data from all of the individual plans, and we looked at, you know, basically 500,000 records and determined how many of these had people that crossed over between plans. Roughly 15% of the population had service in more than one retirement plan across a different system. And we compared, if we're looking at just one individual system, how would they have calculated the liability? How would their actuary have calculated their liability based on the data they had versus what does the CSA provide as a benefit considering all their service that we now have access to? The ratio of that is basically how much each of these benefits should increase and what we would recommend that each one of the actuaries look at to increase what they're valuing as their liability to recognize this additional service that they don't see. So on page 5, you'll see that the numbers have changed quite a bit. These in the green up top is the load factors that they've been using. These plans have been, the three primary plans have been using since 2001. And especially for vested terminated and non-vested terminated members, there's a pretty heavy load to recognize, you know, the value of this benefit. Well, when we looked at this again using the more recent data, we found a much lower load is needed. There's not as many people that are working across plans. There's different eligibility rules than were available back in 2001, and there's impacts on salaries. I'll talk a little bit more about what those impacts directly were, but basically a number of things moved to cause our recommendation about those factors to decrease. If we move to slide 6, you can see what this looks like from a liability perspective. And in total, by changing these assumptions, you're looking at about a $1.3 billion reduction in liability across all the plans. So among all the assumptions we've been talking about over the last year or two that have increased costs, this is one that's actually going in the opposite direction. So again, just because it hadn't been looked at in such a long time, some of these, it just hasn't moved in a while. You normally wouldn't see this big of a jump at one period of time. So finally, I'll just mention on slide 7, just to give you a better understanding of what happened in the last 15 years that's causing this to move. The rule of 90, which stopped for members hired after July 1, 1989, is basically phased out. You know, we're almost 30 years past that, so there's not as many that are being affected that are, especially that have been in more than one pension plan. So that's having a much smaller impact. The actual retirement rates, people are choosing to retire later even under if they are eligible for rule of 90, so that's having less of an effect. The salary scale, I mentioned that's one of the big pieces is how big your final average salary is what makes this a really valuable benefit. And honestly, over the last, 5-10 years, we've seen a lot lower salary increases, occasionally, salary freezes, whereas the previous study was looking at the late 90s as their experience period. So they were seeing much higher salary increases and expecting this to be a much more valuable benefit. So in our new depressed economy where inflation's lower and all of our other assumptions have decreased our expected rate of return, this is another one that's being decreased for similar reasons. So it makes sense to be consistent. And lastly, the employee contribution rate. Incidentally, employees are contributing a lot more now than they were in the 90s. And what that means is that it might be more valuable from an actuarial perspective for them to take a refund of employee contributions than to take their pension that might be deferred for 20 or 30 years. So in that case, there's a lot fewer people that are impacted by this because just a refund of employee contributions is more valuable to them. So I'm happy to answer any questions if there are about our study from here.
Interesting. Thank you, Mr. DeLeon. Are there any questions? Ms. Lucheski, Ms. Burr, anything? No. Okay, thank you very much for this presentation. With that, any other questions? And would somebody like to move LCPR 17-M1? Can I have a motion? To move.
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Representative Thiessen moves LCPR 17-M1, the approval of actuarial assumptions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. With that, we also have Senate File 545, House File 565, and it is the revised and updated 2016 Omnibus Retirement Bill. And there is a technical amendment, the 1A amendment. I will turn it over to Ms. Lucheski and Ms. Barth, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So House Senate File 545, House File 565 is, as Senator Rosen said, the revised 2016 Omnibus Bill. And I'm just going to give kind of a quicker overview because there is a memo that goes a little bit more specifically within the provisions. But as I said, this is the 2016 Omnibus Pension Bill, but some of the provisions that were in the bill last year have been removed from this version, specifically the provisions that the governor cited as the reason for vetoing the bill last session, mainly the modification of the St. Paul TRA and MSRS COLAs. The current version of the bill is made up of administrative and non-controversial provisions that the Pension Commission and both legislative chambers heard and approved of last year. So just kind of a quick overview of what's in each article. Articles 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 contain...
Ms. Barth, before you go ahead, if I could just explain to the members, my thoughts here is to go ahead and pass, make a motion to approve this And then we're going to use this as a vehicle for all the work that is done this year. And then we'll go ahead and send that one pension bill moving forward. It was a good bill last year, just a few little glitches, and we took those out, as Ms. Barth is going to go through. But that is the plan here, is to have this available. Thank you. Ms. Barth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Articles 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 contain the administrative revisions for MSRS, Para, TRA, and St. Paul teachers. And again, these are non-substantive changes that are really purely administrative and aid in the internal operations of the plans. Article 6 updates the actuarial assumptions that the plan's experience studies recommended and that were approved by the Pension Commission last year, and those are the ones that Susan mentioned when she was discussing the assumption changes for this year. Article 7 contains the provisions dealing with volunteer firefighter pensions, and just for an example, those include the recommendations from the Volunteer Fire Relief Association Working Group. Articles 8, 9, and 10 revise plan-specific issues, like, for example, making Paris law consistent with the Hometown Heroes Act. Article 11 contains the provisions that correct plan errors for small groups and individuals. And then Article 12 contains all of the technical corrections, like obsolete references, that we as the LCPR staff and the revisor have found that can just be removed. So the technical amendment, which is the 1A amendment, is purely technical. It's just to correct a few of the provisions that are being repealed within Article 12. And it's in your packets as well, yes. So the bill currently repeals certain provisions that deal with the Duluth Teachers Retirement Fund, which was merged into TRA a few years ago, and so therefore they're obsolete, those references. But we noticed that the repealer actually repealed whole subdivisions rather than specific paragraphs that mentioned Duluth. So this amendment just removes the paragraphs rather than the whole subdivision, purely technical.
Okay. And any questions on the 1A amendment? Representative
Madam Chair, I will move the 1A amendment to Senate File 545.
1A amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. With that, we have the Senate File 545 and House File 565 as amended. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a couple questions about sections that were not brought forward into the bill, because it does seem like I don't know that the governor had objections to all of these sections, and just to a little rationale as to why they weren't included. So, for example, I think there was an agreement on the 5% of salary for St. Paul teachers' retirement effective 2018. Was there a reason that that wasn't included?
Ms. Barth.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Pappas. So we actually kind of sat down with the plans to go over the omnibus bill, and we knew that the plans were going to be coming forward with revised funding proposals. Mm-hmm. And so it was just kind of decided that this particular bill would be more administrative.
More administrative.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the reasoning behind that. And then, like, with the Colerain Bovee provision, that was actually able to be fixed without legislation, so we just were able to take it right out.
Okay, I think your response really includes everything in number one.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Does that satisfy you? Would you like to have Ms. Schertz up? Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Just a little bit more background on this. This represents the a large part of the body of work that the Commission did last year. And we kind of talked about knowing that there was going to be the correction coming forward overall, needing to take some of those provisions out that we were attempting to do last year, because we're going to have a more robust discussion this year and making the ultimate decisions on where we were going to be going. Instead of having to start back at square one with each of the individual constituent issues, each one of the plan issues that we had agreement on, we felt that putting this into a bill this way, bringing it before the Commission, laying it over for inclusion in the 2017 bill would be the most efficient use of time. And I'd like to thank Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth for their time on that. And from the House's perspective, I chief authored it, and I would also like to thank the co-authors on this from the House, Representatives Thiessen and Murphy, who have also signed on this, who had been involved in the body of the work that was before us from last year as well.
Okay. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Any further comments on this? Understand the thought pattern here. Somebody like to make a motion, Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just move that Senate File 545, House File 565 be incorporated into the omnibus pension bill.
As amended?
As amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Pappas. With that, members, look at that. We are doing pretty good. Just a couple comments, and my promise was 7 o'clock, and we will continue that. Just a couple comments, again, to all the folks that came to testify. Thank you very much for coming. Again, I want to just stress that this is the beginning of the process. We are starting very early, wouldn't you say, for pensions. It's very important to hear the discussion, your concerns, but please do not make any assumptions that we already have it in our mind what's going to happen. This is a long process. You have to have faith in this commission. I have faith in this commission, and I think we're going to do some really good work this year. So with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.